Welcome to North Shore News and Interviews on Amherst Island Radio. Each week, we keep you updated on newsworthy events, happenings, and conversations that we've had with people in the local community and beyond.
A clean energy company looking to build an energy storage center in Loyalist promised the project would bring 670 direct construction jobs and 40 permanent jobs to the area. HydroStore presented their plans for creating the Quinty Energy Storage Center to Loyalist Township Council. The proposed site is on a portion of an already existing industrial aggregate site near the intersection of County Road 22 and Town Line Road. Staff with the company noted that each phase of the project will provide over $1.4 billion in economic benefits to Ontario, including the boost in local jobs. The company will also be making long-term direct contributions to the township and county through a community benefits fund. Vice President of Business Development with HydroStore, Shahir Aziz, explains the project and why they chose the area.
The Quinty Energy Storage Center is a energy storage project that we have been working on for the past couple of years in Lennox and Addington County. The reason why we are so attracted to this location is that we want to be adjacent to the Lennox Transformer Station, which is a critical transformer station in the province of Ontario. It allows for power to transfer east towards Ottawa, as well as transferring power west towards Toronto when needed.
Aziz speaks about the jobs the project looks to bring to the area.
We are a long-term infrastructure project. What that means is that we actually need to be constructed on site and on the ground, which is really good for boosting local economy as well as regional economy. Our project will create approximately 670 full-time construction jobs, as well as 40 jobs once it's actually operating. And what's really exciting about these jobs is that these job opportunities, once operating, are not, you know, jobs that need to take away from any industry, but rather repurposing jobs that come out of the fossil fuel generation space. We're going to be driving local benefits to both the local Indigenous communities, as well as working with your township to see what opportunities for our project to really work and contribute to the community.
Aziz highlights the work they've been doing in the area.
We've been working on two sites in this area, with one of the sites we'd like to call Quinty East. The location of the site, proposed site, is on the northern end of an existing quarry located on an industrial aggregate site in Loyalist. We have been able to screen the site from a desktop environmental screening perspective, as well as conduct studies to understand the interconnection capacity and start to move ahead with some of the feasibility and development of the site. We have also partnered with the Mohawks of the Bay of Quinty, who are our First Nation Indigenous partners for the project and are supporting us on our journey ahead.
Aziz details the technology that HydroStore uses.
Our technology is one of the lowest cost, long duration energy storage technologies available today, and it operates emissions free. What else is also really unique about our technology is that it has a 50-year plus operating life without any degradation. That's really helpful because it means that we aren't repeatedly refurbishing our storage project, and instead it operates like any other. You could compare it to a pump storage plant, which is online for 50-100 years and doesn't require any major replacements.
Aziz details HydroStore's process for generating electricity.
The way our technology works is that you take electricity from the grid when power is cheap or in excess. You use that to compress air underground into an underground cavern. During that process, as you are compressing air, we actually take heat and we store it into a thermal management system. That heat is being generated when you're compressing air underground. Once the system is fully charged, the air pushes all the water out of the cavern and holds in steady state. When you then need to discharge to generate electricity, you flip a valve, the water pushes the air out, the air goes up our well and through our turbine generating electricity.
One of the primary engineers with HydroStore, Lucas Texan, explains how the company builds its caverns and notes the rock formations in the area.
We site our caverns specifically to be in very impermeable rock formations that are not suitable for hosting water. It's one of our siting criteria. The rock that is in this area is excellent for that case. It has very low hydraulic permeability once you're below the karst formation, below that limestone and into the Canadian Shield, which is where we would target to build our caverns. Our construction shafts, which will travel from the surface down to our cavern construction horizon, are cased with the steel casing to ensure there's no interaction between our A-case process and the groundwater.
Aziz speaks more about how the project will benefit the province, country, and local economy as well.
We're also going to be generating approximately $1.4 billion in support of Canada's GDP, and also once operating about $31 million per year in GDP. We've also been started engagement with Loyalist's town planning team, and who've guided us towards your requirements for community engagement and a pathway towards municipal support resolution. And so we will be engaging following Loyalist's requirements and doing our best efforts to engage with the community and proceeding ahead with that as we look to move forward.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. All sides have backed down and agreed to work together after the town of Greater Napanee was warned about potential legal action from the county. Lennox and Abington originally requested that the town cease distributing its encampment protocol map that identified public property, including county lands. Greater Napanee Council confirmed a letter they received September 9th from the county states that Lennox and Abington does not intend to pursue any further legal remedy to the disputes that existed. The letter also noted that the county would pass its own bylaw regarding the matter at hand. CAO of Greater Napanee, Matthew Grant, explains the timeline of events.
I'm pleased to say that we're now at a place where I kind of wish we had started, but we did receive correspondence from the County of Lennox and Addington. It is their intention to pursue their own bylaw. We did send a letter to the County of Lennox and Addington following our last meeting. We offered to assist them in their bylaw. I'm happy to share that we've already made that offer to the chief administrative officer of the county, as well as the head administrative head of Pelis. And we sent a note to the County of Lennox and Addington as they are identified by the Ministry of Municipal Affairs as the service manager accountable for service delivery. And we also sent a note to Pelis, and the mayor sent one to the Pelis chair, as the operational service provider.
Grant explains the latest recommendation he made to council, which they approved at their meeting.
I'm recommending that we offer use of our facilities in the community and that council authorize staff to waive any fees that we might charge so that when they engage in consultation, as we engage in consultation, that they can do so with whatever facilities at our disposal that they feel will fit their plan.
Grant details how staff are moving forward.
Council and staff look forward to putting this unfortunate incident behind us. And, you know, I know that, you know, staff are very much looking forward to proceeding forward with our partners with mutual respect and mutual support. With that in mind, we are pleased to assist with any upcoming consultations, bylaw development, or activities with the summit. Any of the ongoing efforts of the, you know, provincially funded and mandated organizations responsible for housing and homelessness.
Mayor Terry Richardson notes the importance of working together while trying to help unhoused individuals and families.
We've got to move on from this. We have to work together to try and resolve a multifaceted problem that exists in every municipality in this country and probably in this continent. So if we don't, we're going to continue to spin our wheels, and the people that we're supposed to be representing are not going to be represented.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. The Lennox and Addington County OPP Detachment presented their annual report, including data about crime, traffic enforcement, and community well-being. The report noted an increase in violent crimes through 2024 and the creation of a Crime Prevention and Community Support Bureau. The report also highlights the detachment's initiatives and successes from the past year. Inspector David Tovill noted where the department is at and what they're looking forward to in the future.
Highlights our crime, roadway, waterway, and trail safety and our community well-being data, and highlights successes from the past year. This 2024 report also as a midway report for the Lennington-Addington OPP 2023 to 2025 action plan and provides updates on our current progress and our action plan commitments. So at the end of 2025, we will be going into our next action report. And what's going to be exciting about this one is this time with having our detachment board in place, where we're going to be working with the board who represents our communities to understand what our priorities are in each of the communities. And that will form our action plan for our officers moving forward over the next few years. We'll be able to have those little milestone markers throughout that term to evaluate how we're doing and pivot as needed to ensure we're meeting the needs of our community.
Along with the creation of the Crime Prevention and Community Support Bureau, the detachment's response to an increase in violent crimes includes more training for officers. Tovell explains the training they've implemented.
We've increased the number of officers trained in major case investigations, including human trafficking, intimate partner violence investigations, and investigative interviewing techniques. In courses like the human traffic investigations, these are new courses over the last few years. Again, it's a new concern in policing that we never really had to worry about a number of years ago, but it's just the reality of society now. And, we've learned that human trafficking goes through all of our communities and often it's within all of our communities. It's important for our officers to understand and recognize those signs for those types of crimes.
Tovell details the importance of training and notes the amount of new young officers on their front line.
During the 2023 to 25 action plan period, our detachment, Lennington-Addington OPP, have increased our capacity for investigative excellence in a number of ways. Training has been key for us in training our people. Our detachment frontline in particular is made up of a lot of new young officers. Probably most of our shifts have less than 4 years policing experience, and probably 80% of that is less than 3 years. We have officers who have been on a year and a half coaching new recruits, and that's just the reality of policing across the country. So it's not unique to the OPP, it's just a reality. And with that then comes a high demand for training. And so that's a big burden to put on our Ontario Police College and our Provincial Police Academy out of OPP headquarters.
Tovell spoke about road safety in the area.
Our officers remain steadfast in their commitment to keeping our roads safe. We're pretty proud to say that our impaired driving enforcement has increased 20% over where it was in 2023. Our speed enforcement's increased 32% over 2023. Our seatbelt enforcement has doubled since 2023, and our distracting driving enforcement has near tripled since 2023. Our fatal motor vehicle collisions were reduced, and I'm pleased to report that year to date, there have been no fatalities. Personal injury collisions and property damage collisions have reduced an additional 14% year to date right now from where they were in 2024 through the efforts of our officers.
Tovell went on to speak about waterways and trails in the area as well.
We've engaged with community stakeholders and regional traffic teams to address a number of specific issues on our roads, waterways, and trails. And during this action plan period, we've committed to a full-time marine program. We've done this for a few years now. And between May to September, the OPP has full-time operators on our waterways throughout Lennington-Addington. In 2024, our operators alone engaged more than 1,300 operators on our waterways, promoting recreational safety with a focus on preventing unnecessary injury or death.
Tovell noted the amount of mental health calls they received over the last year.
We are down in our mental health calls this year. Last year, we had 338 calls year to date. We're at 300 right now, so we are down a bit, but still 300 calls with regards to mental health. And when we didn't at one time have that social services available, and it was police responding who weren't trained to deal with providing the assistance to these people, that's in place now.
Tovell detailed some of the new technologies officers are using.
The OPP has invested heavily on our frontline mobile digital technology. Over the last year, year and a half, all of our cruisers now have in-car cameras. They have car cameras not only recording the exterior of the car, but we also have cameras inside the front seat, back seat for when we do have prisoners. All officers now have body-worn cameras that are activated through self-activation or when we activate our emergency lights in the cruisers. Not only do our in-car cameras come on, but our body-worn cameras also. And all that video evidence is captured in cloud-based. Each cruiser has mobile workstations. Each officer has now been issued a mobile cell phone. And the purpose of the cell phone is all the video evidence that's coming from our in-car camera, body-worn camera, and taking audio statements. That's all tethered through the mobile phone. And our officers do a lot of the work in uploading that through that device.
Tovell explained the use of closed-circuit television for officers.
We've also trained our officers in the community, the new community safety outreach system, commonly referred to as the CCTV, so Greater Napanee Area, through grant funding and working with Lennox and Addington OPP, have enhanced their CCTV system in the downtown and the main intersection areas. It was a couple of years ago when I first started as a detachment commander, there were a few cameras in place and they were looking to tear down a building, so they called me just to give me a heads up that that infrastructure was going to be torn down. And we were able to stop that and actually take advantage of a grant, a substantial grant from the Ontario government. And the CCTV network we now have in the Greater Napanee area has got AI technology. It's got a capacity for automated license plate recognition and those sorts of things. We've used it for locating missing persons, solving crimes.
Tovell speaks about the connection between communities within the county's detachment board.
And we have representatives from all of our communities. I'm very, very pleased with the relationship that we've established within the board already. So great communication and a lot of great stuff ahead. Chairman Norrie and I attended Ontario Association of Police Service Board meeting in London a couple months ago together, and we're able to talk about a lot of, you know, policing issues and community safety issues that we share and the work that we're looking forward to doing in the coming year. So things are working really well there.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. According to their 2024 annual report, Loyalist Township Emergency Services responded to a total of 542 calls for service in 2024. This included a total of 65 fires, resulting in just over $2 million of loss. Fire Chief Kent Reedman noted an approximate percentage of accident calls that come from the 401.
When I look at the stats from last year, it's about around 100 calls. Were car accidents or motor vehicle collisions, exactly 100 out of our calls. So that accounts for about 18.5% of our calls are car accidents. Out of that, I don't have the specifics on the 401, which I can get, and it's probably a good number to actually keep track of. But I would, just a rough guess, we're going to look at probably at least 75%, give or take, of our calls, of our motor vehicle collisions would be on the 401. So a significant amount. So you're probably looking at last year, give or take 75 calls on the 401.
Councillor Paul Proderick spoke about the time spent on the 401.
The chief and I talked last night and I was really intrigued by how much time is spent on 401 calls. I think people need to realize how much of, you know, our time is spent on the major highway.
Reedman provided council with statistics and general information on a variety of operational and division-specific aspects of their team in 2024. They welcomed Reedman as their new fire chief last year, along with two deputy fire chiefs. Just under 6,500 hours of training were delivered to staff in 2024. They counted a total of 29 more service calls in 2024 than in 2023, representing a 5.35% increase. The Amherst View Station responded to the most calls in 2024, being the primary response area for 225 calls. Reedman spoke about the breakdown of their annual report.
It's based on just the average of the municipality. We could separate the more urban areas out. It does create some significant differences within that reporting structure. It definitely can be done. It was just done as an average over the entire township.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Greater Napanee Council decided to defer a decision about selling a piece of land with a former CN rail line on it. Staff will wait to hear from the town's ad hoc committee on trails. In May of 2023, council held a meeting regarding the land in question and created the ad hoc committee on trails. The trail, previously used by the community for recreation, was recently closed following an increase in use of private property by individuals and motorized vehicles. The public portion of the trail ends soon after crossing Highway 401 and leaves no other option but for users to access non-public land if they wish to continue. The town has since blocked access over the bridge on advice of the ad hoc committee. Working on crossing the 401 is underway, but plans cannot be finalized until the MTO finishes widening the highway. The town is also waiting for clarity from the MTO on exactly how in-town trails will be able to cross Highway 401. Mayor Terry Richardson explained why they decided to defer to the ad hoc committee.
We've employed an ad hoc committee to do this work. They've done a marvelous bunch of work. We have a direction to go in. We should bring them back and have a conversation with them because they're the ones that did all the work on this. And so maybe what we should do is before we change direction, because we did have a direction with the resolution, before we change direction, maybe we should have a chat with them and see what their thoughts are. And then, because let's face it, none of us had worked on this, and we had six very able, competent people that worked on this thing. And I'll tell you, they came up with some solutions that I didn't think were possible. And I just don't think it's fair to the ad hoc committee for us to make a decision this evening without actually consulting with them. I just think we owe it to these six people to come and have a chat with us, because I got to admit, they have done an absolutely marvelous bunch of work on this thing.
The town CAO, Matthew Grant, originally recommended removing the resolution from the town's resolution tracker, but staff did not agree. Grant explains.
Since this report's been published, a number of council members have been kind enough to come forward and let me know that the initial report as written really missed the mark. And they explain the reasons why, and I have to agree with them. And what specifically members of council said to me was, by removing this from the resolution tracker, it doesn't sufficiently remind us of our obligation to the stakeholders that we made. And so for clarity, it was a good deed that was not necessarily well thought out. And council, who did not have any desire to change what we were doing, was kind enough to point that out. So it is my intention with some of the background information and an alternative to consider, to sort of put us back on track there.
Councillor Michael Schenk explained why listening to the ad hoc committee's recommendation made the most sense.
We all agreed the ad hoc committee said, we're going to close the railway line. And the town went ahead and we put up barriers, but it closed no trespassing on the railway bridge itself. And it's proven in how many reports that we've seen that saying that railway line ends and doesn't go anywhere. It's just going across behind somebody's property. I always try to put yourself in the other person's position, all right, or the other farmer's position or the other thing. What would you feel? Now, we've already gone through all these public meetings and discussions and everything else, and then we're going to leave it to a new council, and you never know who you're going to get, and they're going to say, oh, by the way, we're going to make this into a walking trail. Now, you've got the county arguing about homelessness. You know, you're going to leave public property behind a multi-million dollar farm, and they're not supposed to be upset. I would lose my mind.
Councillor Angela Hicks explained why deferring to the ad hoc committee was council's best option.
I don't have a crystal ball, but I do not foresee in 50 years any way possible for that rail line. And again, that's already been determined by the ad hoc committee, and council has accepted their recommendations. I don't agree necessarily with putting it up for sale right now, but I think it should be. We can remove the resolution. I like the resolution because it's there and it's a glaring reminder to everyone on this council and future councils that it needs to be dealt with, that there is a project underway. It's just sitting there. It's not doing anything. I don't know what the amount of money would be that we would get for it, but I think good faith to the ratepayers of the town and the ad hoc committee is to just leave it, not sell it right now until we've made further headway with the MTO on getting over or under the 401.
Schenk noted potential plans he's seen and the importance of the recommendation of the ad hoc committee.
If the trail was going somewhere and it was not in a dead end, you would have an argument on leaving it open and not having it in a surplus list. Camden Road, when they expand the 401, they will be doing redevelopment on that bridge, in a walking or whatever. A couple of designs that I saw was one going north with the old Skidoo Trail, one going possibly over the Camden Road, over that bridge there. But at no time do I believe MTO will go underground right where the railway bridge is at this current time. So therefore, we got a dead-end trail, and we've had some very intelligent people sitting on those committees. And if we say, well, by the way, for the last 3 years that you've been doing this committee, and we're, you know what, we don't agree with you, and you've already come to our public meetings, and you gave our presentation, and we didn't question you there, and now we're going to go ahead and say, ah, we don't want to sell it, when they're saying, hey, guys, we don't need it, well, I don't want to be down that road.
CAO Matthew Grant explained what future talks with the ad hoc committee could look like.
I'm confident that they would be very receptive to, you know, sharing their perspectives that they've already given, and to hearing that we're open to making on the ground progress on, you know, trails within the town. I think in some of the conversations that I've had, is talk is great, but investing in some of the trail stuff that we have on the ground is even better.
Staff confirmed that any discussion on the sale of the lands cannot occur until it has been deemed surplus by council. This procedure would need to be accompanied by public consultation. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Landowners in Loyalist Township have already showed interest in a proposal brought forth by Westbridge Renewable Energy for a large-scale solar farm. The proposed project would be located on approximately 800 acres of private land near Switzerville. With a target operation date in May of 2030, the project would be capable of supplying energy to 20,000 homes. According to the township's zoning and official plan policies, Loyalist is recognized as having some of the highest photovoltaic potential in the province. Westbridge Renewable Energy is a Canadian-based developer focused on utility-scale solar photovoltaic projects. They currently have operations in Canada, USA, the UK, and Europe. Director and Executive Chair of Westbridge Renewable Energy, Scott Kelly, explains the components of the project and what the site would look like.
Components would really be the solar PV photovoltaic panels in a rural environment. Quiet, generating solar energy and clean electricity to connect to the grid and supply to the local community and industry. In terms of what it would look like, typically rows of 10-meter solar panels, some very small substations and inverters, and gravel access roads and perimeter fencing. We try to keep a fairly low, as much of a low impact as possible, and protect the local environment as much as possible, and it's very key in our site criteria and our development.
Kelly speaks about the proposed site south of the 401 near Switzerville.
This is subject to change. We're going through quite a bit of environmental and other consultation work, working with the local municipalities and trying to refine and fine-tune this.
Kelly explains how the company chooses an ideal site.
The way we look at projects and the way we would select an ideal site is obviously, is there availability on the local transmission line to add new power? And can we connect to it in an economic way and transfer and transmit the clean energy in an economical and efficient way? We look for non-prime agricultural land where there's very good solar radiance, meaning the ability to generate an excellent amount of energy that makes the project economical. Where there's definite landowner interest, we see the landowners as very much as our partners, and where there is municipal and community support, and very much where we're working within the guidelines and the policies of the municipalities and the communities that we are partnering with.
Kelly notes how the company collaborates with the communities they work within.
All of our projects are very much a collaboration with the communities in which we are working with. We spend a lot of time with the municipalities, with the local landowners, working within the regulations and the environment that we're working in. Every project is unique, and we look at ourselves as long-term partners with the community and do our very best to benefit the community in every way we can.
Kelly explains how the company establishes a community benefit fund for communities they work with.
In terms of adding back to the community, it's something we very much take as part of our project. Every project that we build and plan and bring to market includes a small fund that would essentially share some of the revenue and some of the benefit and some of the funding and money that comes from this project with the local municipality.
COO and director with Westbridge Renewable Energy, Margaret McKenna, speaks about the lifespan of the project.
The typical lifespan can be kind of anywhere between 35 and 50 years, depending on whether the panels are replaced and how many times they are replaced during the life of the project. There will be a decommissioning plan. It's required as part of the renewable energy approval process. And we anticipate that there would be coordination and consultation with the Loyalist Planning Department in terms of what that looks like.
Kelly explains the timeline of their proposal and their steps going forward.
We did have a pre-consultation meeting at the end of July. We have met with several landowners. I've met with several of them personally in the last few weeks myself, and we're planning an open house just around the corner on the 25th of August at the Odessa Agricultural Society Fairground to discuss face-to-face with anyone in the community who'd like to attend. And we'll be back in September with much more finalized plans, and we'll be coming to the council for some support. And the final submission is October 16th.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News.
This has been North Shore News and Interviews. If you have an idea for a story or want to create stories for this show, consider joining our 100% volunteer team. Contact Amherst Island Radio for more details.